I think every young boy has a car that stands out among all the other cars. Their dream car. Mine was a Mustang. You even feel cool when you say it, Mustang. Always wanted one. Always thought that I would have one. And then when I became ordained, I kind of put that dream aside because I would never make enough money to own a Mustang. And then one day I got a phone call from a friend of mine who owned a car dealership, and he had a Mustang that just came on his lot. It was not just any Mustang. It was a convertible. And he called me down to look at it, and he was going to do a direct trade, my Jeep for the Mustang. It was sweet. It was metallic black with a tan leather interior. It was a beautiful car. And I was excited until I saw it, and then I said, you know, it seems a little bit flashy. I don't know if a priest should really be driving so flashy a car. But he told me, oh, don't worry about it, Father Jim. You work so hard, you deserve this car. And I said, really? I was still a little uncertain, so he said, I tell you what, take the car for the weekend, bring it back on Monday, and let me know what you think. So I said, all right. I took the car, and I brought it to all my friends at the parish. And all my friends at the parish just oohed and aahed. I said, oh, Father Jim, this is your car. You look so cool in this car. Your dog looks so cool in this car. And when I asked them, don't you think it's a little bit too flashy? They said, no, Father Jim, you deserve this car. You work really hard. You deserve this car. I said, really? And then I brought it to a friend of mine, Monsignor Carr, who was my first pastor as a priest. And he said five words to me that changed my mind. No, 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 no. He said, what are you thinking? You are a priest. You cannot drive a car like that. And I knew he was right because I was never quite settled with the car anyway, but still I was upset and I was really, really disappointed. And I returned the car, and it was on my mind for about a week about how disappointed I was that I finally had the opportunity to have the car of my dreams, and I was unable to get it. And then it struck me. I love being a priest. I really, really love being a priest. The gifts of the priesthood are manifold. I get to be present when God does his most amazing things. I get to be present when God brings healing to the sick. I get to be present when God brings mercy to the sinners. I get to be present when people come together as one in the sacrament of marriage. I get to be present when he celebrates the Eucharist. I love being a priest, and I love the gifts of the priesthood. And for one whole week, all I could think about was that one car that I deserved but didn't get. It's very sad, because the more we believe we deserve, the less able we are to receive his gift. It's a very sad and tragic image that we're given in the gospel, that this man approaches Jesus, the culmination of every grace, the fullness of every gift that God has ever given to humanity. And this man approaches Jesus, and all he can think about is everything he thinks he deserves but didn't get. Imagine coming face to face with the Savior of the world. Imagine coming face to face with the incarnation of God's love and mercy and grace and peace. Imagine coming face to face with the greatest gift that God has ever given to humanity and not being able to think of anything else besides what we think we deserve and didn't get. It really is a great tragedy. And so much of the tragedies in our lives come because we don't get what we think we deserve. And the problem is that the more we think we deserve, the less able we are to receive his gift. The gifts of Jesus are manifold. The gifts of Jesus are present. The gifts of Jesus are every single day offered to us. And so often our hearts are so troubled with all those things that we think we deserve and don't get. We think we deserve the love of another person. And when we don't get it, we're bitter. We think we deserve a raise at work, and when we don't get it, we're bitter. We think we deserve a car, and when we don't get it, we're bitter. We think we deserve the friendship of someone, and when we don't get it, we're bitter. We think we deserve so much, and every single time it's denied us, we become more and more bitter. The truth is, we don't deserve any of that. We do not deserve the love of our spouse. And so every time it's offered, it's offered as pure gift. We don't deserve the respect of our children, and so every time it's given as pure gift. We don't deserve a friendship, and so every hand that reaches out to us in friendship is reached out as pure gift. We don't deserve mercy or forgiveness, so every time it's given to us, it's pure gift. We don't deserve happiness, and so every smile that comes to our face is pure gift. It's such an amazing thing because the less we believe that we deserve, the more gifts we are able to receive. And Jesus says, what you have received as gift, give as gift. The problem is that when we think we deserve something, even if we get it, we only share it with those who we think deserve it. The less we think we deserve, the more we receive as gift, and the more you receive as gift, give as gift. I love being a priest, and I love being a campus minister. The day I arrived at JMU, I received a phone call from a young man who was coming in. He was in orientation that week, and he was concerned because he was assigned to a suite, and in the suite were young men who just wanted to go out and party. They wanted to go out and drink. They wanted to go out and party, and he wanted something else. And he called me and asked me, what other alternatives are there for me? What do you have for me to do so that I can make a choice different from what my other suite mates are doing? What a gifted moment that was, because it really wiped out all of the stereotypes that we're always given about college students. Anytime we turn on TV and watch a show or a movie about college students, they're always the same. It's always about party animals concerned only with their next beer or their next date. The truth is that the college students are about much more than that. The college students that I minister to are young people who are really dedicated to the mission of the church. They're people who want to go out and serve the poor. And it's such a gift to me to be able to be present when they do it. When those young people make the choice to come and open our home for the homeless and house them for a whole week, to feed them, to take care of them, to clean up after them, what a great gift that is. When I'm there and they give up their spring break week so that they can go to Haiti or the Dominican Republic or New Orleans or Kentucky in order to serve the poor and build homes for the homeless, what a great gift it is to be present when they do that. When they make the choice to do something other than what we see them making the choice to do on TV, it is such an incredible gift to be present. The trouble is that it takes money. It takes money to be able to offer those alternatives for these young people who are so hungry for it. It takes money to be able to keep a building open to provide a place of worship and prayer and adoration. It takes money to be able to provide them with the opportunity to go to Kentucky or New Orleans or Haiti or the Dominican Republic. It takes money to be able to offer the alternatives that they are seeking in their lives. And what a great gift it is to be able to offer that opportunity. There's going to be a second collection today after the first, immediately following the first, and I'm asking for your help. I need your help, but I don't deserve it. And so any help that you can give us will be received as pure gift. And what we receive as gift, we will give as gift.